Okay, we are in Deuteronomy 29.
Oh, we made it.
We finished last time with the blessings and curses. And at this point, all of that leaves off, and there is a renewal of the covenant. The renewal of the covenant is introduced in 29 verse 1, and then there are five divisions. So let's see, 29 verse 1. These are the words of the covenant the Lord commanded Moses to make with the people of Israel in the land of Moab, besides the covenant that he had made with them at Horeb. And so it is a renewing and a confirming of the covenant. And there are certain things that are going forward in this. You got Deb back in. Okay.
It might not be Deb Krugler. It might be Deb Carter because she connects her big screen.
Okay. The five divisions are in chapter 29, there are three divisions. Verses 2 through 9 are an appeal for all that the Lord had done for Israel. In verses 10 through 15, there is a summons to enter into the covenant. In verses 16 through 29, there is repeated mentions of the punishment that came with their apostasy. And then in chapter 30, the first 14 verses are about the return of Israel on the basis of sincere repentance. And it finishes in verses 15 to 20 with another solemn urging connected with a blessing and a curse. So we begin, and first of all, it is looking back over all that God had done for them. Verse 2.
And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, You have seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land.
Okay.
I need glasses.
Yeah. The great trials that your eyes saw, the signs and those great wonders. Verse 4.
But to this day, the Lord has not given you a heart to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear.
And part of that is because of the people themselves. But it depends on God to give them eyes that see, ears that hear, heart to understand. Okay, verse 5. I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes have not worn out on your feet, and your sandals have not worn off your feet. Verse 6 is a little bit odd. Somebody read that.
You ate no bread and drank no wine or other fermented drink. I did this so that you might know that I am the Lord your God.
Okay, so they didn't have bread. What did they have?
Manna.
Manna.
They didn't have wine or strong drink. What did they have?
Water.
Yeah. Okay. And they could have had that regimen of eating for a couple of months. Actually, for a year and a couple of months. But they refused to go in. Verse 7. And when you came to this place, that is around to the east of the Jordan, Sion, the king of Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us to battle, but we defeated them. And this is all in this section on what the Lord did for them. Verse 8.
We took their land and gave it as an inheritance to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh.
Okay. Therefore, keep the words of this covenant and do them, that you may prosper in all that you do. So finishes the section that is all that the Lord had done for them, verses 2 through 9. Next section, 10 through 15, a summons to enter into the covenant. Verse 10.
You are standing, all of you, before the Lord your God, the heads of your tribes, your elders, and your officers, all the men of Israel.
Okay. Is it just the men? No. Your little ones, your wives, and the sojourner who is in your camp, from the one who chops your wood to the one who draws your water. So this is an all-inclusive call into the covenant.
There's somebody wanting in, Dolores.
That gives us 16 in Bible study today. That's pretty good.
Okay. Hello, Dolores.
She doesn't have her audio on yet. Oh, she can hear you.
Dolores, can you hear me?
I do. I can, yes.
Okay.
My grandson was here, so I was late.
We are in Deuteronomy 29. Just finished with verse 11.
All right.
Verses 10 through 15 are a call to enter into the covenant once again. And it is all inclusive. That's why verse 11 names all those that it does. Verse 12.
That you may enter into covenant with the Lord your God and into his oath, which the Lord your God makes with you today.
Okay. And why is that you want to enter into that? That he may establish you today as his people, and that he may be your God, as he promised you, and as he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Now, this is going to expand. Verse 14.
I am making this covenant with its oath, not only with you. Oh, wait, I'm skipping. Oh, yeah. I was right.
But with whoever is standing here with us today before the Lord our God, and with whoever is not here with us today. What does that mean?
Us.
Mm-hmm. It was to be to the descendants also to become a covenant of blessing for all nations. Acts 2. Details the spreading out of the gospel into the language, the intercession of Christ in John 17, verse 20, was for all those who would hear through the apostles' sharing of the message, and it is a covenant that invites the entire human race. So finishes the second section. The third section is from verse 16 to the end of the chapter and is repeatedly mentioning the punishment that comes from apostasy. So verse 16.
You know how we lived in the land of Egypt, and how we came through the midst of the nations through which you pass.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in Egypt, living in slavery and uncertainty and going through the nations as they have gone on their way. And what have they seen there among the nations? Verse 17, and you have seen their detestable things, their idols of wood and stone, of silver and gold, which were among them. You have seen their detestable things. That word is there. Their galulim. Galulim is a combination of the generic word for gods, Elohim, with a small e, and galal, which means round fecal droppings. That word began to be used back in Leviticus 26, carries on through the Old Testament, picks up again somewhat in Jeremiah and a whole lot in Ezekiel. And they will throw their galulim away as they flee.
They translate it idols in this.
Or detestable things.
Yeah.
But I have to look it up to see which
here you want it.
Word it is in the Hebrew.
Galulim. Galulim. And it's in 17.
Where are
abominations
you?
And their idols right there. Galulahem.
They're up. Yeah, they're idols. Idols, not the detestable things, but they're idols. Okay.
Which is what they made when they their melted detestable the calf things. Down.
Yeah.
Was an idol peppering the desert floor.
Yeah, when Moses ground up the gold of the golden calf and made the Israelites drink it, then he made that idol into galulim. Okay. Enough teenage boy fascination with scatological humor in the Bible. Verse 18.
Beware lest there be among you a man or woman or clan or tribe whose heart is turning away today from the Lord our God to go and serve the gods of those nations. Beware lest there be among you a root being poisonous and bitter fruit.
Okay. And so the turning away from God is a poison that will poison the community. Verse 19, one who, when he hears the words of this sworn covenant, blesses himself in his heart saying, I shall be safe though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart. This will lead to the sweeping away of moist and dry alike. Verse 20.
The Lord will never be willing to forgive him. His wrath and zeal will burn against that man. All the curses written in this book will fall upon him, and the Lord will blot out his name from under heaven.
Mm-hmm. So if you're saying to yourself, I'm a Christian, I go to church, I can get away with, that's a very dangerous thing. Presuming on the grace of God is dangerous. Verse 21, and the Lord will single him out from all the tribes of Israel for calamity in accordance with all the curses of the covenant written in this book of the law. Verse 22.
And the next generation, your children who rise up after you, and the foreigner who comes from a far land, will say, when they see the afflictions of that land and the sickness with which the Lord has made it sick.
Mm-hmm. the whole land burned out with brimstone and salt, nothing sown and nothing growing, where no plant can sprout, an overthrow like that of Sodom and Gomorrah, Adma and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and wrath. That's a parenthesis that Moses puts in there. And then back to the main idea of the sentence, verse 24. Huh.
Dan, Jesus.
All nations would say, why has the Lord done so to this land? What does the heat of this great anger mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just a minute.
Then the people will say, it is because they abandoned the covenant of the Lord, the God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. Verse 26.
And went and served other gods and worshiped them, gods whom they had not known and whom he had not allotted to them.
Mm-hmm.
Good, long, good.
Therefore, the anger of the Lord was kindled against this land, bringing upon it all the curses written in this book. Verse 28.
Pretty wild.
And the Lord uprooted them from their land. Okay. Anger and fury and great wrath cast them into another land as they are this day.
Okay. So that would be the explanation. If you turn away from God thinking, oh, I can get away with this, your sin will find you out. And turn away from God in unfaithfulness, then the curses start coming. And the curses come until the repentance. But that's part four. This is part three right now. 22, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. God will take care of the secret things. Just do the things that we've been given to do. However, Delitzsch, even in times of the greatest apostasy on the part of the nation, there would always be a holy seed which could not die out, because otherwise the nation would necessarily have been utterly and forever rejected, whereby the promises of God would have been brought to naught. There never will be a day when God does not give daily bread, because he told us to pray in that way. It's his word, it cannot be broken. God had promised to have his people Israel for all eternity. There never would come a day when all would turn away, because then the promise and the covenant would become void. And so even Elijah, everyone's turned away, and God says, no, I have 7,000 in Israel. All the knees that have not bowed to Baal, all the lips that have not kissed him. There will always be the remnant. Not only the curse pursues, but also the blessing. That's some good news. Which leads us then into chapter 30. Chapter 30, verses 1 through 14 is the repentance and returning that Moses predicts. So, and when all these things come upon you, the blessings and the curse which I've set before you, and you call them to mind among the nations where the Lord your God has driven you. That's interesting. Verse 2.
And you return to the Lord your God and obey his voice according to all that I command you today, you and your children, with all your heart and with all your soul.
Okay. So there will be a return. And this is always the promise. And Paul called to mind this promise that there will be a return. There is a return. Things are going on with people of Israel, those who are, according to the flesh, Israelites, turning to God, coming to Jesus Christ. But then verse 3, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have mercy on you. And he will gather you again from all the peoples where the Lord your God has scattered you. There is more in Delitzsch details more, but let's go on to verse 4.
If your outcasts,
oh, go ahead, Mike.
If your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there the Lord your God will gather you, and from there he will take you.
And the Lord your God will bring you into the land that your fathers possessed, that you may possess it, and he will make you more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. Is that your phone? I'm ignoring it. Delitzsch says, the gathering of Israel out of all the countries of the earth would then follow. The promise neither points directly to the gathering of Israel from dispersion on its ultimate conversion to Christ, nor does it furnish any proof that the Jews will then be brought back to Palestine. This is evident from the curse of the dispersion, which includes the Roman dispersion, in which the nation still continues. But this application is to be found in the spirit and not in the letter. There is to be an increase in the number of Jews when gathered out of their dispersion into all the world, above the number of their fathers, therefore above the number of Israelites in the time of Solomon. Palestine will never furnish enough room for a nation multiplied like this. The multiplication promised here, so far as it falls within the Messianic age, will consist in the realization of the promise given to Abraham that his seed should grow into nations. The innumerable multiplication, not of Israel according to the flesh, but of Israel according to the spirit, whose land is not restricted to the boundaries of Canaan or Palestine. The possession of the earthly Canaan for all times is nowhere promised to the Israelite nation. And so Delitzsch, who is ethnically, Delitzsch was a Jew. And he points to this and says, this is our hope. The blessing of all the nations through Abraham and through Abraham's seed. Verse 6.
And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring, so that you will love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul that you may live.
Okay. And right there in verse 6, we are a little bit trotting off into Ezekiel 36 that promised that God would remove the heart of stone and give us a heart of flesh. It is the new birth, it is the new me that he promises. And that's something that I can't generate on my own, of course. To have a new me has to come from the Creator, who then does the creating of a new heart. So, with verse 6, we find out that all of this gathering is to be the gathering by the work of the Holy Spirit. And as it comes into the Gospels, Jesus tells Nicodemus, you must be born again. Then we go to verse 7. And the Lord your God will put all these curses on your foes and enemies who persecuted you. Verse 8.
And you will again obey the voice of the Lord and do all his commandments, which I command you today.
Okay. So there again, we depart into the prophets. Jeremiah in chapter 31, 31 to 34. God gave the promise that he would write his law on our hearts. And in Ezekiel 36, after the promise of a new heart, then he says, and you will be careful to keep my law. So all of these things that have to do with the voice of the Lord, his commandments, his word, his promises in Jesus Christ, all of those come to us. Let's see, verse 9. The Lord your God will make you abundantly prosperous in all the work of your hand, in the fruit of your womb, and in the fruit of your cattle, and in the fruit of your ground, for the Lord will again take delight in prospering you, as he took delight in your fathers. And if you remember, it was when we got to Deuteronomy, was it chapter 6 or chapter 5, where the Aaronic benediction is pronounced. Maybe it's Numbers. I forget where that is. Oh, well. But when Delitzsch looked at that, he said, and the last part of it, the Lord look upon you with, and we usually in our hymnals translate that favor, but Delitzsch said it's more intense than that. So I've started using the word delight. The Lord look upon you with delight and give you peace. And there is that thing running through the whole section of the Torah, that God wishes to delight in us and would once again look upon us with delight. And where are we?
Numbers 6, 23 to 27.
It's not Deuteronomy 6, it's Numbers 6. Okay. That's only one book off.
Verse 10. If you obey the Lord your God and keep his commands and decrees that are written in this book of the law and turn to the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul.
Mm-hmm. And that again, with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. That would be Deuteronomy 6. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. So what is being promised here in this section is that after the Israelites had been through the experience of the judgments and the curse and the scattering, after we have been through realizing the consequences of our sin and confessing and returning to God, all of that being the work of the Lord in our hearts, he creates within us the new heart, the new you. He creates you in such a way that you are responding by faith, and then he delights in your responding by faith. Does anybody remember? You guys interviewed me by phone way back when, 2013.
And we came.
And you asked, what are the things you do to prepare for a sermon? And I said, that's kind of hard to tell, but let me tell you what I'm planning for this Sunday. And then proceeded to tell you the story of my mother and the Christmas present, where she took me to the store, she gave me the money, she showed me that little trinket that she wanted me to buy for her present. She took me to the register, showed me how to buy it. I was real little. And when we got home, she helped me to wrap it and to address it. And then when it came time to open it, she was so delighted and surprised.
Such a sweet story.
And I said, that's how it is with God. Mm-hmm. Because all of the stuff, all the setup is his, puts everything in place. We respond in faith. We worship him. That's all his doing. And he says, what a wonderful thing you are bringing. Which may cause us some confusion, but it's a wonderful confusion. And just enjoy it. That's what it is to be a part of the people of God. That's what it is to belong to him. Oh, verse 11. For this commandment that I command you today is not too hard for you, neither is it far off. Paul will feel some of these words for one of his preaching things. Verse 12.
It is not in heaven that you should say, who will ascend to heaven for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it?
Well, as Paul adapts that, it's who will ascend to heaven to bring Christ down? Okay. Neither is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it? And then verse 14.
No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so you may obey it.
Okay. This is how close it is that God gives all of the blessings, the promises, the call, the regeneration of the heart, the faith that he puts within us. All of it is so near to us. And now, verse 15. Okay, we're in chapter 30. Yeah, verse 15 is another solemn warning. 15 to the end of the chapter. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. Verse 16.
If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, that I command you today, by loving the Lord your God, by walking in his ways, and by keeping his commandments and his statutes and his rules, you shall live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to take possession of.
Oh, okay. I just didn't want it to keep ringing.
But if your heart turns away and you will not hear, but are drawn away to worship other gods and serve them, verse 18.
I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess.
I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life, that you and your offspring may live. And then qualifying live, verse 20.
And that you may love the Lord your God listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Okay. Slight difference in translation. Is your life and length of days, which is different from he will give you length of days. He himself is your length of days. Which brings us to the completion of that section and launches us into the final section, 31, 32, 33, 34. In the final section, there are, number one, handing over the task of leading the people to Joshua. Number two, finish writing out the laws and hand them over to the priests to set in the holy place next to the ark. Number three, to write a song, an ode as a witness against the people. And then there are added the blessing where Moses bade farewell to the people, and finally the account of his death. We begin then with the completion and handing over the book of the law. Chapter 31. If we're very good, we may finish this next week. 31. So Moses continued to speak these words to all Israel. Verse 2.
And he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go up.
Hold on. 120 years ago, when? It's his birthday?
Today.
Happy birthday, Moses.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I'm fifth. How old am I? I'm 54 today, but I mean, I've also been 54 for 6 months already.
Yeah. Okay. Continue on.
Oh, I can no longer go out and come in. Also, the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross over this Jordan.
Mm-hmm. The Lord your God himself will go over before you. He will destroy these nations before you so that you shall dispossess them. And Joshua will go over at your head as the Lord has spoken. Okay. This is heading into what's going to happen. Verse 4.
And the Lord will do to them what he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites whom he destroyed along with their land.
Mm-hmm. And the Lord will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. And now this is a preview of something that will be in Joshua 1, verse 9. Verse 6 here.
Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, but it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you.
Okay. So we start heading into this. And now things are going to happen. Verse 7, then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall put them in possession of it. Verse 8.
It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed.
Okay. good message. Verse 9. Then Moses wrote this law and gave it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and to all the elders of Israel. And it is entrusted to them, to the priests, and to the elders, because it is to be something that is to be a constant reminder to all of Israel. They are to read it regularly. They are to meditate on it, study it, learn from it, find the prophecies in it. And verse 10.
And Moses commanded them, at the end of every 7 years, the set time in the year of release, at the Feast of Booths.
So at the Feast of Booths, late September, early October, Feast of Booths. When all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. And because all this law is the entire first five books of the Bible up to this point where Moses leaves off the writing, it's much to be able to read all the way through. So Delitzsch says, and the custom is to read from the law. Verse 12.
Assemble the people, men and women and children, and the aliens living in your towns, so they can listen and learn to fear the Lord your God and follow carefully all the words of this law.
Mm-hmm. And that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land that you are going over the Jordan to possess. So this is the command for the reading of the law. Now then, Joshua. Verse 14.
The Lord said to Moses, now the day of your death is near. Call Joshua and present yourselves at the tent of meeting where I will commission him. So Moses and Joshua came and presented themselves at the tent of meeting.
So is it not that Moses would not then, apparently, the day is coming or the day's approach? How long did it take to write the song of verses of chapters 32 and 33? But Joshua and Moses present themselves before God. And the Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood over the entrance of the tent. Okay. Verse 16.
And the Lord said to Moses, you're going to rest with your fathers, and these people will soon prostitute themselves to the foreign gods of the land they are entering. They will forsake me and break the covenant I made with them.
Oh, blunt talk, huh? Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them, and they will be devoured, and many evils and troubles will come upon them, so that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us. Verse 18.
And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil which they have done, and that they have turned to other gods.
And this is being said because there has to be provision made for how are we going to bring them back? And that's the focus of what's going on. How are we going to bring them back? Verse 19. Now, therefore, write this song. by the way, that's what it's called in these chapters. It's just this song. It's not called in these chapters the Song of Moses. It's not called the Song of the Lord. It's not called anything else. It's just this song. And as the verses referring to it went on, I started digging and asking the question of, well, who wrote this song? And it's fascinating going through it that it is not clear who wrote this song. It's attributed to Moses, but there are sections where it appears to be God's words. I looked up in the Lutheran Study Bible to see whose it was. They very cleverly sidestepped that question and would not answer it. Delitzsch doesn't give a real clear answer. Here's my conclusion. At this point, finally, the word of God and the word of Moses are interwoven so completely that it is pointless to attribute one way or the other. It is God's song, it is Moses' song. And Delitzsch hints that Joshua may have been involved in the writing of it as well. So, okay, verse 19. Now therefore write this song and teach it to the people of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this song may be a witness for me against the people of Israel. Verse 20.
For when I have brought them into the land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to give to their fathers, and they have eaten and are full and grown fat, they will turn to other gods and serve them, and despise me and break my covenant.
And when many evils and troubles have come upon them, this song shall confront them as a witness, for it will live unforgotten in the mouths of their offspring. For I know that they are inclined to do even today before I have brought them into the land that I, for I know what they are inclined to do even today before I have brought them into the land that I swore to give them. Verse 22.
So Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the people of Israel. Write or write down.
Moses wrote it.
Yeah.
Earlier in verse 19, God said, write this song.
Right.
And Moses wrote this song. Oddly enough, there was a song that we, back in our days going to college at River Forest, in the one of the student groups, somebody wrote a song called This Song. You remember that?
Yeah.
Not the same. No. Okay, so verse 23. And the Lord commissioned Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the people of Israel into the land that I swore to give them. I will be with you. Okay. Verse 24.
And Moses had finished writing the words of this law in a book to the very end.
So now, okay, is this the end of where he's writing? Or was it verse 9, back in verse 9? I think verse 9 is an anticipation But here is the actual finish of the writing of Moses, which would mean, according to Delitzsch, from then on, there is a second hand writing out the rest of the book. Or the Song of Moses, written by Moses with Joshua, and that is kept separate from the rest of the book, although it is then incorporated into the book of Deuteronomy. But this is where it finishes, and he turns the book of the law over to the priests. Verse 25, Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Verse 26.
Take the book of the law and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God. There it will remain as a witness against you.
Okay, so there are going to be two witnesses. There's the witness of the book of the law, and there is the witness of this song, which the heading down above verse 30 says the Song of Moses. Nah, it's never called that. It's this song. The Song of Moses later on in the Bible refers to Exodus 15 and the song by the sea. Where are we? Verse 27. For I know how rebellious and stubborn you are. Behold, even today, while I am yet alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord. How much more after my death? Oh. Verse 28.
Gather to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing and call heaven and earth to witness against them.
For I know that after my death, you will surely act corruptly and turn aside from the way that I have commanded you. And in the days to come, evil will befall you because you will do what is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger through the work of your hands. Through the work of your hands would mean very specifically the making of idols. And verse 30.
Then Moses spoke the words of this song until they were finished in the ears of all the assembly of Israel.
Okay.